Thank you for attending session 226 titled Trans Mormons. And before we begin, we ask that you check your cell phones and make sure that they are turned off, and that those who are attending be respectful and attentive. It is the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. And please keep that in mind while engaging in the question and answer portion of the session, following the remarks of the presenters. Those who cannot abide by those guidelines should refrain from commenting and will be asked to leave should they become disruptive. This session will be recorded and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. And if you haven't already, please consider to subscribe into Sunstone Magazine at the registration desk as well. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask that both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. In its proclamation to the world, the LDS Church declares that, quote, gender is an essential characteristic of individual, premortal, mortal, and eternal identity and purpose, end quote. What are the implications of this declaration for transgender individuals? This session seeks to bring clarity to the matter of nonconforming gender identity and its expression among Mormons, and to examine policy and practice within the Mormon community in light of science and scripture. Presenters will speak in the following order. First, we have Bob Reese. He's a scholar, poet, essayist, and blogger. He teaches Mormonism at Graduate Theological Union and the University of California, Berkeley, and is the former editor of Dialogue, a journal of Mormon thought. Next, we have Nika Algood. She's a wife and mother of three, of which Grayson is her middle child. And since he transitioned to age 16, Grayson and Nika have been active working with Equality Utah to extend non-discrimination protections to include sexual orientation and gender identity. Sarah Jade is a professional actor, director, and writer, and she can be seen in the movies such as She Lives by Night, The Work and the Glory, and most recently, The Jerk Theory. She is an active Mormon and enjoys attending Relief Society at her work. She recently accepted a position at Highland Junior High as a drama teacher, where she hopes to build a program that will bring to the students opportunities that will help them in all aspects of their life. And she sits on the steering committee for Mormons Building Bridges and on the board of Affirmation. Grayson Moore is age 20, is female to male transgender. Grayson is a junior math major at the University of Utah and sings baritone in the Salt Lake LDS Institute Singers. Thank you.
And I'm sure Grayson will be singing baritone is one of his great accomplishments. My wife said she married me only because I was a tenor, so tenors and baritones are in great demand in choirs. When asked why she ministered to the poor and the destitute on the streets of Calcutta, Mother Teresa said because she saw them as Jesus in disguise. The fact of the matter is, Jesus is always in disguise, especially when we think he isn't. According to the 25th chapter of Matthew, Jesus is continuously shape-shifting, taking on different guises and different characters, almost like one of those quick change artists who's on the stage and one character goes off and quickly changes into another that we already recognize when he or she comes back on the stage. Or in those films where someone like Robin Williams plays all of the characters and they are extremely distinguishable from one another. So that, it seems to me, is the ultimate revelation of the 25th chapter of Matthew, is that we could easily recognize Jesus if we really understood that Jesus is everyone. If we understood, and if we saw Jesus, that 25th chapter of Matthew, Jesus says, when I was in prison, you visited me. When I was hungry, you gave me food. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. And all of us say, well, you know, we don't remember that, because if it had been you, we would have done it. But those other people, they weren't Jesus. So we feel, that is the illusion we feel, is that we would be the first person to respond to Jesus if we saw him on the street corner and he says, "Can you give me a dollar? I haven't eaten lunch." Or if we were told that Jesus was in the local jail or in prison, we would be the first ones to go to see him. But in his many disguises, where he's masquerading as the dirty homeless guy standing on the street corner with a sign that says, "We'll work for food," we pass him by. When he is disguised as a slovenly woman who might be taken for a prostitute, who's asking for a drink of water, we most likely don't see her as Jesus. And when he is like the hundreds of thousands of black men and boys incarcerated in our prisons for even minor violent crimes, or minor nonviolent crimes, we probably think he is getting just exactly what he deserves. Sometimes Jesus' disguise is so good, we are positive the person we see couldn't possibly be Jesus, especially when we see him or her come into our congregations dressed in ways that doesn't seem to fit his or her gender. There's a song with the lyrics, "People who love people are the loneliest people in the world. But people who love people and who aren't loved back are really the loneliest people in the world." And among those are our transgender brothers and sisters. Statistics reveal that among our population, transgender men and women are bullied at least 50% in high school. 41% of them attempt or succeed at suicide, and 61% of them are subject to physical violence or abuse. Those statistics are so far above the norm as to be astonishingly disturbing. Think of Jesus as we think of those statistics. Think of Jesus being bullied and abused. And except for the attempt of suicide, that really characterizes Jesus' life when he was here. We're teaching the New Testament and studying the New Testament this year. There's nothing more dramatic than what happens at the beginning and the end of the last week. At the beginning, everyone is so excited about Jesus. They've been following him from Jericho, shouting Hosanna to the Son. When he comes into Jerusalem to the Mount Olives to ride the donkey into Jerusalem, people are so enamored of him that they put roses and flowers and straw in his path. They take off their coats and cloaks and put it down so Jesus can walk on that. And there's all of this great. And I said to my Sunday school class, would you have been among those people on that first day of the last week? And everybody said, yes, I'd be there shouting Hosanna. And then I said, where would you be 5 or 6 days later? Because nobody is there. Even his chosen disciples abandoned him. And he is absolutely alone. And what I want you to think about is what that aloneness must feel like, what it must have felt like for Jesus, and what it must feel like for our transgender brothers and sisters who feel that kind of aloneness and abandonment. So we imagine that we would have been among those who would have said, "Let me carry the cross a few steps." We imagine that we would be with there at the cross saying to the Roman soldiers, "You can't do that to him. He's the Son of God." We imagine ourselves like Peter imagined himself, standing up for Jesus when someone asked if he was one of Jesus' followers. But in reality, we probably would have been like those people. We didn't live then, and we can't really say for sure what we would have done. But we do live now, and we do have moral choices. And among those moral choices, I think, are the choices that are always before us to consider or to look at whoever or whomever we might consider the least and to respond to them not only as Jesus was, but as if they were Jesus. We are living in a time where there is now a great deal of interest and I think very positive publicity about people who are transgender. I have been collecting articles and just wanted to mention a couple. There, in fact, there is a full page editorial in the New York Times a couple of, maybe a month or so ago, that in fact, there were two. One was called the Struggle of Transgender Workers, another called Transgender at the CIA, and one more, full page, The Quest for Transgender Equality, on the full editorial page of the New York Times. On Wednesday, June 17th, a front cover article, The New Girl in School, Transgender Surgery at 18. Nicholas Kristof, who always has important and enlightening things to say, in a column of the 14th of June, Many Caitlyn Jenners, in which he talks about Caitlyn Jenner and as an example of so many people who have to deal with what it means to be transgender. A wonderful article by Peggy Stack in the March 31st General Conference edition of the Tribune, in which Nika and Grayson are cited and quoted. In contrast to that, there was an article on the 22nd of June in the in Meridian Magazine. It was just the opposite of those, called The Bruce Jenner Controversy, Get the Facts About Gender Confusion, that uses language that I think that most transgenders would find objectionable, including the more milder one of misguided, mental illness, mental disorder, gender confusion, citing a Johns Hopkins medical doctor whose work in the 60s and 70s has been highly discredited by contemporary psychotherapists and people doing research, talked about the destructive myths that can erode our children's evolving sense of self. A very disturbing article that reinforces the prejudice and reinforces the mythology, talks about Caitlyn Jenner's transition has caused great harm, and ends by saying gender is a gift that cannot be changed. I had a conversation, and part of what has caused me to put together this this panel is that I was contacted about, I guess about 6 months ago, by a transgender investigator living in the Middle West. And he called to say, I just wondered if he would talk to me about my struggles. And I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, I believe it. I've been investigating the gospel. I believe that it's true, but I can't get baptized. And I said, well, let me talk to your bishop. So he gave me the number. I talked to the bishop, and the bishop kept referring to this transgender person as she. And I said, look, he identifies as male. Do him the courtesy of referring to him by the pronoun that he prefers. He continued to call this person she, and then said, I asked a little bit more, and he said, well, she asked for a blessing. And I said, well, what did you do? He said, well, I gave her one. And I said, well, what name did you use? He said, well, I used her birth name. And I said, you know what? What an insult. Here is somebody asking for a priesthood blessing. And instead of blessing him in the gender he identifies with, you do something that he would consider objectionable. I got a call from this transgender man one Sunday morning, and he said, I don't know what to do. They don't know what to do with me. they want me to go to Relief Society, but the Relief Society is not comfortable because I wear a suit, and Priest is not comfortable because obviously there are things that show that I'm not like other people. And he said, but they don't know what bathroom I'm supposed to use. And so he said, I had to walk 6 blocks to the Walgreens to use the bathroom. So I called the bishop and said, look, this should be a relatively easy problem to solve. And he said, well, what should we do? I said, okay, if everybody's uncomfortable, just go to a bathroom and let him go in, go to the men's room, let him go in and stand by the door, if that's the only thing. But, you know, there is a solution to this. Treat him with dignity. Treat him with respect. The problem is that we don't know how to do that. And I understand that in a way because we are not equipped to do that. But this is exactly what the gospel of Jesus Christ is supposed to teach us how to do. So we have, we're blessed today to have a very loving and enlightened mother, Nika Allgood. I love that name, Allgood. We should all have that name. who has been a model of a parent dealing with a transgender child. And this, again, must be, at least at the beginning, just as it is, with, not just as it is, but those of you who have gay and lesbian children, in the beginning, everybody doesn't know what to do about that. But enlightened people find out and then do it. So we'll hear from Nika, who will give you Transgender 101, a short lesson of vocabulary, so you kind of know how to talk about this. And then her son Grayson will address this. And then Sarah Jade, who's done the transition from male to female, will also address this. And we'll hopefully have some time for questions and answers. Nika?
Just a correction after I get a quick Trans 101, that's going to be Sarah Jade and then Grayson, and then I'll talk a little bit about the differences with her. Okay, so Trans 101 in about 3 minutes. As human beings, we have a biological sex that's determined by our gonads and the hormones that are released by our gonads and the secondary sexual characteristics that those hormones produce. Right? Everybody remember that from high school health? We also have a gender identity. Our gender identity exists in our brains. That is our internal sense of who we are. We also have gender expression. Our gender expression is how our gender identity and our biological sex interact with the world around us. What clothing we wear, we paint our fingernails, the activities we choose to participate in, those are all examples of our gender expression. We also have sexual and romantic orientations. Those determine whether we are straight, gay, asexual, and that's much broader than who we want to have sex with, but also deep sense of who we are and how we interact with the people around us. So, those for the majority of people, their biological sex and their gender identity match. But for people who do not have a perfect match between their biological sex and their gender identity, they are transgender. Transgender is an umbrella term. It includes people who are binary, like someone who has a biological sex at birth, female, but who identifies as male. Right? That's simple. You know, switch from one aspect of the gender binary to the other. It also includes people for whom the standard boxes of male and female just don't fit perfectly, who might identify as genderqueer, or people whose sense of their gender identity might vary over time. even though we didn't know it. Right? And so when we talk about Grayson in the past, even when I talk about a three-year-old, I said he, because now I know. I felt that. I just didn't always know my answer. Finally, because our gender identity is independent of whether or not someone has transitioned, it's also independent of whether or not someone has done medical steps of transition. Just a reminder that it is appropriate to ask a transgender person about the status of their genitals. Just like it's not appropriate for me to approach you and ask you the status of yours.
Play, it's told somewhat in flashback and somewhat in present day, and in the I was kneeling in prayer with my ex, and I just did get up off my knees, and that was when I told her everything. She was the first person I told. And we cried a lot, and I tried going to the bishop, and the bishop sent me to LDS social services therapists, and I went to the state president, and he sent me to a real therapist.
Yeah, the next 6 weeks.
history of transgender people. From the days of Christine Jorgensen and Renee Richards, when transgender people started being in the news, they were adults choosing to transition. And even a decade ago, you mostly just heard about people transitioning in adulthood. But that is changing very rapidly due to greater availability of information and more accepting social climate. There are young children and teenagers who are identifying as transgender. I want to say that this is definitely a good thing. People who are able to transition younger avoid a lot of emotional trauma. I have a friend who is an older adult, and she talks about how she did not have a childhood. She didn't have a boyhood, she didn't have a girlhood, she had a survivorhood. And if we can help today's transgender young people avoid having a childhood, or to avoid having a survivorhood and having another childhood they need, they will be more mentally healthy. It is also a biologically good thing. There are medicines called hormone blockers that can prevent a transgender young person from going through their biological puberty, and that would be a very traumatic event. And for older teens, there is the option of cross hormones to let them go through biologically appropriate puberty. And those are great blessings of physical, mental, and social health of transgender young people. But having young people transition earlier is a complicated set of challenges for parents. A person who identifies as transgender as 3 or 7 or 12 or even 16 is going to need parental help and support to find qualified therapy, to find affirming and helpful doctors. They are going to need their parents' help navigating the issues of school and church. And that help needs to be their parents. And I have talked to some of my friends about how in the book, How to Be a Perfect Mormon Mom, there is no chapter on how to raise your transgender child. In the absence of that useful chapter, I found myself needing to rely on personal revelation, which has been a tremendous blessing to me, as I have prayerfully gone to the Lord for answers in what to do to help Grayson. I have gotten answers, and I'm so grateful for those answers. And those answers have been consistently that I needed to help Grayson transition. In particular, Grayson's interactions with the church, I have seen the need for personal revelation. Our church is so gendered, particularly in that third hour when we have the girls go in one room and the boys come in another. But also, our entire church, our acceptable clothing for church is so gendered. And a lot of the behaviors we do, even during sacrament meeting, are very gendered. And this turned out to be extremely triggering of gender dysphoria for a lot of transgender people. Before we figured out that Grayson was trans, he faithfully went to church every Sunday and sat next to me, and his skirt started shaking. And I now know that he was having panic attacks, and there were a lot of Sundays where he didn't make it through the administration of the sacrament for me to leave. And he would have to leave and go home. And the next Sunday, he would get dressed and go to sacrament meeting again. And once he transitioned and was able to wear a suit to church, he got to stay. And I think part of our goal as parents is if we have a child who wants to stay engaged in the church, that as a parent we want to help church leaders see their task is to help our children stay, help them be comfortable enough so that they can stay in sacrament meeting, so that they can stay and learn the gospel and participate in Sunday school and not just be sitting there trying not to break up. Grayson was in high school and transitioned, he went to Sacramento, he went to Sunday school, and then went home because there wasn't a welcoming place for him at Northern Howard. Since then, he's had issues with families to make sure he had something useful to do, even if they are in their calling or his current issue. And he just goes to Priesthood meeting with the rest of the guys. And I'm grateful for those bishops who kind of try to find a way to appoint us. Because that is a matter of practice, not policy at this point, that's young people's experience is very widely in our Buckley Hill Church. And one of my goals by speaking out as a parent is to help us communicate in turn to our leaders so that our young people will be welcomed and nurtured in the church, even as they do the transitions that they need to do for their own safety. Thank you.
Thank all of you for your courage and your good example. Last summer I was interested in doing some research on transgenders, and so I went to visit the Ogden Outreach Center, and there found a number of transgender teenagers and others who had been kicked out of their families. And it was very sad to me to see these people again kind of lost in the world and not knowing quite what to do, because when you lose your family, as some of the gay people in our church know, that when you lose your family and you lose your ward family, it's very hard to find a family, and we all need families. This man I was telling you about, who called me from the Midwest, when I talked to his bishop was saying gender is an eternal part of our identity. And this came right after he was telling me that he had seven children, and when his oldest was born, his oldest was in the hospital right next to a child that had both male and female genitalia. And so when he said gender is an eternal part of identity, I said, well, tell me what that person's identity, that baby's identity will be. And he said, gee, I never thought about that. I have a good friend who is a psychotherapist for the church, and I asked him during this period of time I was counseling with this person what he should do, and he said, we don't have any information, any enlightenment on this. He said, I can't refer you to anyone that I trust who could help you. We don't know how to respond to transgenders. We don't know how this works. The church does not have a position on this. We don't have any way of dealing with this issue. That does not prevent some people, however, from saying things that, you know, sometimes are not enlightening. But there's a good film that I recommend called Trans Mormon, and last year or the year before at Sunstone, the parents of this person who transitioned from male to female said that their state president wrote to the first president and said, what should we do? And the answer that came back was, you have as much light on this subject as we do. So that's, you know, in a church in which we think there is an answer to everything, it's fortunate that there are people like Nika and like her son and like Sarah who in the absence of revelation seek for their own and find guidance and help set an example to what the rest of us should do. We have some time now for questions, so if you have questions, would like to ask them of one of the panelists, please feel free to do so. Yes, and I'll repeat the question so you don't have to come up here. Yes.
Robert, I'm back to the physiology a little bit in your presentation about the heart yesterday. Mm-hmm. And there was reference made to the brain. Do we know anything about the heart connection?
That's a very good question. question. The question is, in terms of the relationship of the heart to the brain, what are the brain is saying about your identity or your orientation or anything. My guess is, and I will leave it to Sarah and Grayson to confirm this, I think the heart follows what the brain and the body is saying. Do you find a discrepancy between your heart and your brain on this subject, Grayson?
Related to the...
Hold it close.
Okay, related to the physiological aspect of the brain, we do have some small studies that are fairly recent indicating that, I don't remember exactly what part of the brain it is, but that it has certain structures that are different depending on whether you are male or female. And studies have indicated that transgender people, you know, whether or not that they've gone on hormones or anything, so, you know, that they nonetheless have the brain structures that match with their gender identity. And so that does seem to indicate that being transgender is indeed like a true biological intersex condition of some kind, that there is a physiological difference there that, since our emotions really begin here and then get named in our brains, that there probably is no discrepancy between what we think we are and what we feel we are. Is that what you would say? Any other questions? Yes, back here.
This is more directed toward practice again than both the case for Sarah and for Grayson. I was wondering if Sarah still holds a priesthood and if Grayson does hold a priesthood.
Okay, so this question is whether or not Sarah, who was born male, holds and served a mission, holds the priesthood, and whether Grayson, who was born female and transitioned to male, has been ordained to the priesthood.
I have not had my gender changed on records of the church yet, although formally, but in my most recent conversation with my current state president, he said that as soon as I successfully got my gender legally changed, that they are going to inquire with the first presidency whether they can change my gender on the records of the church. No, I haven't. I don't have a priesthood at this point, but it seems like it's hopeful.
should.
Another question? Yes, in the back.
I was just wondering if maybe Grayson and his mom could speak on the support that either they got or didn't get specifically from the bishop and the board members in the neighborhood. How would they do all of this for you and your extended family as you went through this extraordinary transition?
I understood you. If I understood the question, beyond the family and perhaps the bishop, what kind of support have, or perhaps challenges you faced in within the extended community and congregation?
Our board is pretty awesome. You guys should all move. I'm sure there were people in the board who were thrilled when Grayson started wearing a suit to church, but nobody said anything rude. And I'm very grateful for that. Having said that, I'm sure there were things they could have done better. Grayson didn't attend Young Men's or Young Women's in our board after he transitioned. And yet, once a month, they had a combined activity. And Grayson didn't go to those because he wasn't attending the Sunday in Windsor Commons, and so he never heard about them. And I thought afterwards, wow, they could just assign somebody to call Grayson every week, or every time they were going to have a combined activity and say, hey, our combined activity this week is we're going ice blocking. You know, we'd love to have come.
And, so you didn't see that reaching out to him?
No. On the other hand, what was going to Sunday school like, Grayson?
Hold it close.
That was definitely more than 20 minutes ago. I don't know if I remember anything specific.
Those are approximately
So I think what we have is, you know, if you've lived as long as I have, you've seen there was a time when the church discouraged interracial marriage, and you know, now you've got all kinds of, you know, interracial marriages in the church. No one seems to be disturbed about that. We've seen a lot of progress on gay and lesbian issues, still not as much as we need to see. We're a ways from doing that, but I think that as we look back, we will be grateful for people who had the courage and the enlightenment to set an example and teach us how to behave and how to be Latter-day Saints, how to be Christians in relation to things that seem strange and that we don't know how to deal with. Sometimes we hear on the radio or we hear something, they're giving an alert about something that, like an invasion or something that they have, and they say, this is just a test. I think the 25th chapter of Matthew is always telling us this is a test as to how we respond to Jesus' children. And I hope that this will help all of us who have been here today do so with transgender members with a little bit more love and enlightenment. Thank you so much for coming.
Presenters today. This is a really enlightening and inspiring session, so thank you.